welcome to 30 Plus One, the podcast, the community and all-round connect for music managers. And because I couldn't get anyone else to do this, here I am, your host, Kadee Campbell. As the intro said, my name is Kadee Campbell and I'm going to be your host. It's probably good to start with a little bit about me. First of all, you won't be able to spell my name, but I will put it in the show notes so you can have a look there. I am born and raised in London. I live with my dog, Jacob, and I'm actually risking recording this with him in the room, and he's a puppy, so he likes to make things all about him, and I'm just hoping he's not going to do that today and he's going to let me get through this. Trusting him at the moment. And what else can I tell you? Well, you know, there's loads of other relevant things, but maybe sticking to the relevant stuff or things that you might like to know are that I'm a music manager. I'm an independent. I have a small roster of music artists. And I've been doing this now for about 3-4 years. So not the newest, not the oldest. And I moved actually from a sector that was completely different and entirely disconnected to the music industry. And actually, when I first made the jump to doing music management full time, a lot of my old colleagues were surprised and said, you know, this is so different. This is such a big jump. And for me, actually, the basics of my role before and the basics of my roles before I was a music manager, I would say my career for the last 10 years before that was really in stakeholder engagement. And that's one of those terms that you don't know it until you know it, but I'm about to tell you now, which is essentially about engaging a group in a message that you put out there and then getting them to take some action on it. So it sounds really simple and it is, but there's certain things you have to do to get it right, which again sounds simple, but to get them right take just thought, planning and work. So you have to kind of refine your message. So be very clear about what you are trying to say. And then you have to identify who the stakeholders are. And this is everyone who has a stake in the message that you're trying to put out there or the action that you're trying to get people to take. It could be people that are impacted positively or negatively. But either way, you want them to take some kind of action, or it could be people that are actually going to help further your message as well. They also have a stake in your project. So you refine the message, you identify the stakeholders, and then your final step is to deliver the message to that group you've identified in the way that is actually going to engage them enough to take the action that you request them to take. So there are loads of different ways of delivering that message. So it could be meetings or emails or big events. And I guess that's where the skill comes into it, because it's all about identifying, first of all, it's about how good you are at refining that message, how good you are at identifying those stakeholders, and then how good you are at identifying which is the best method to deliver it to them. And I found that in music, actually, that this was a really good skill to have. And it wasn't such a big jump because the environment changed and the setting changed. So the message was now a musician and their brand and their music. The stakeholders were now the fans, music industry professionals, agents, distributors, labels, all of that. And the way you present it is all the ways that you get music in front of people or get the artist in front of people, music channels, streaming, social media, music reviews, articles, etc. So for me, the bigger jump was more from leaving a stable salary to something that was a lot more a lot less guaranteed. That was the bigger jump for me. But I haven't looked back because it's absolutely something that I love to do. And I think everyone who works in the music industry knows that, you know, everything else just isn't music, basically. So when I, as I said, I came from a completely different background and sector. And what I found is I quickly did an assessment of, you know, what I could bring to the table when I and what gaps I needed to plug. So I realized that I had a lot of the raw skills that you that managers, you know, are listed as things that would be good for managers. I was good at communicating, both verbally and also written. I was quite good at putting copy together, you know, quite good at refining how I delivered that message and doing all of that. I'm very organized. I had a big strategic background, so I was very good at planning. I'm good at developing relationships and I was enthusiastic. I loved I loved music and I loved the artists that I was working with. So I had all of those raw, that kind of basic raw stuff. But I also, when I started to look at other music managers, quickly identified some big gaps that I had as well. I had no industry contacts, well, hardly any, you know, a few local promoters and things like that, but hardly anything else. I didn't have much industry knowledge. There was a lot of terminology I didn't know. I didn't know even really how a manager got paid or, you know, what the average percentages were, or I hadn't seen a music manager and music artist contract before. I also had a full-time job, so I had limited resources, particularly in terms of limited time to get things done and limited money to invest in things like, you know, getting a logo designed, registering the address for my office or things like that. So, and really it was out of the need to plug that gap and the realization that all these other managers had developed these things over years and sometimes decades. And I didn't want to wait that time to have that network. And, you know, I didn't want to just be on my own with it, which is essentially why I set up 30 Plus One, which is a collective of music managers and independent music managers and artists who essentially pool their resources. So this is skills, contacts, funds, and all of those resources pooled really create a place where we can develop our music management companies and our artists. So things that you get instant access to are like templates for contracts, immediate network of other music managers, but also other industry professionals. Also connected with things like registered address and brand and logo design and accountants that specialize in the music industry, and the same with legal services. So all of that. I mean, you can definitely find out more about that if you're interested on the website, which is all spelled out 30plus1.co. And if you're interested in finding out a bit more about me, then you can most certainly stalk me on social media and I will share those links on the show notes as well. Maybe not to all of them, but at least one social account I'll definitely put out there. So what I want for these podcasts in the future is that I want them to be a great resource for music managers who are looking to just gear up, you know, go into the next gear with their music management company, and to gear up also with their manager, with the artists that they manage with their careers. It will also be really helpful. I want each episode to be really helpful for artists that manage themselves as well, who essentially act as independent managers as well as being the creatives, which is a huge job and doable, but you know, you have to be kind of super organized with it. And I just want them to be, I want the episodes to be short and snappy. I know my intro was a bit long there. I just wanted to set the scene a bit and let you know exactly who I was. But it will normally be quite short, and I will hope to keep them between half an hour and 45 minutes, which is roughly the time span I have to listen to podcasts. So I'm just going based on me. I will very much have the podcast directed by the feedback that people give me. So, be nice, guys, but also be honest. I really want to hear what subjects you want covered, kind of guests that you want on, the pace, everything. I'd like to hear about everything. I actually think the best forum for that discussion will be Facebook. So I will post, every time I post an episode, I will also post it to our Facebook page, which is Join 30 Plus One. And then we can have discussions there, because I think the website won't facilitate, the main website won't facilitate that as easily as Facebook will. So definitely like that page that you can see whenever we post anything like that. Today, jumping into it, I want to talk about self-releasing an album or any kind or recording of a track, doing it yourself. So I mean, without a label. So recording the music, promoting it and selling it. It really is no small task, and it does take time for sure, and finances for sure as well. And that can be a whole range of a budget depending on the kind of activities that you take. But of course, if done well, it can be very effective in getting your music in front of people and kind of doing it on your own terms. And I guess that brings us to some of the reasons why people may want to do it without a label. I think the starting point is really that it is doable. Whereas we've spent years before where it's been a closed shop, where you needed a label to get your music in front of people. But now, thanks to YouTube, thanks to online distribution channels like iTunes and Bandcamp, where you can, anyone can just record their music and upload it there themselves, it's really opened it up. And all these kind of separate deals that people can make, which we'll talk a little bit more about later, but with separate professional services, so you could engage someone who might take over your promotion. You can engage somebody who might take over actually getting hard copies of your music out into stores and in front of people. So the distribution. So there's so many things which have completely opened it up. And that may be one reason why people actually choose to do it. It's that it's actually doable. There's also a reason to avoid bad deals. So if you've got... if you're self-releasing, then you have control of your royalties. Essentially, you have control of the fees which are paid for the recordings and the performance of the songs that you produce. And also, I would say you could end up getting better splits as well. I mean, if you take the money that's earned from the track and then you're thinking you have to split it between label, artist, manager, and then any other professional services that you might engage, without the label, there's that one big section of the cut which is taken out. So it could mean also bigger percentages for everyone all round, as well as more control. I think it's also that one thing that we can't forget is that labels are businesses, and as much as they're businesses that operate in the creative industry, they are about financial viability. So sometimes they may want to direct creative projects in a certain way, which may conflict with the overall creativity of the project. So there's also that as well. The other big one, especially for artists who are starting up, could be that the labels are actually silent. I mean, we know how competitive this industry is, and I think opening it up in terms of the things that are available online have only made it even more competitive and even harder to stand out. So when you're labeling, when you're emailing labels, they may just be silent, and it may then leave you to realistically consider self-releasing your album if a label isn't going to release it as well. But I think this is a really, really good point to start to think about what a release is versus a successful release, because as I've said, it's very doable and kind of, you know, easy-ish to release your music, to put it out there, to upload a video on YouTube, to get some online distribution. But is it successful? Is it a successful release? And just because it's easy, does it mean that you should always do it? I mean, I have to say that, you know, my view is that it's not the field of dreams, and it isn't just about if you build it, the people will come. No, there's a lot more work around it. And I imagine that field of dreams reference has really aged me, but there it is. There you go. And I think to assess whether or not it's for you, you really have to look at your long-term goals and your the milestones that are in between that. So what are you aiming for? Are you ultimately aiming to get signed to a major label? Because if so, the things that you might want to consider are, if you do self-release your music and it gets a fair amount of coverage, then, and which I would say, you know, you shouldn't, that you should be anticipating if you're going to release it. But if it gets a certain amount of coverage and a certain amount of people buy it, then a label is likely to be reluctant to re-release that music. So in that case, it wouldn't necessarily be for you. I think also the other question is being very brutal about looking at where you are now. So where you are as an artist, where is your artist if you are a manager? So what kind of following do they have? I would say if you have a low to no following, then I think you need to look at the steps first to build a following before you start releasing music. It's almost like skipping a step. So I know that, okay, so a general motivation for self-release is about getting your music in front of people, but building your fan base and engaging interest from professional services like labels, or maybe if you're an artist that manage themselves, you might want to actually get a manager or an international booking agent or a local agent, etc. And I just think that there are some steps that are better taken before self-release if you have a low following to a zero following. So you can do things like put a demo out on YouTube. You can book gigs and perform locally to where you are before releasing that music and building that fan base that way, collecting emails and followers to your social media. You could do streams. You can enter showcases. You could try and get an award or things like that. There are steps about building your fan base, and if you have a tiny one, engaging that fan base and letting that grow before you'd actually do a self-release. And what kind of size are you looking at? I mean, it's hard to say, but if I had to give a rough estimate, I would say if you've got between 0 to 500 follows, that you should look at, well, yeah, 0 to 500 or just under. Your focus should more be about building up your following. And you also want to make sure that you don't just have those followers on social media, but actually that you have emails addresses that should be close to those numbers. So even if even on an email numbers, because I know the conversion is less, people are more likely to, it's easier to press like to a Facebook page. It's a lot quicker than people actually wanting to share their email address. So you'll likely have more likes and follows on social media than you will actually have people's email addresses. But if you've got under, maybe, so because of that, email's a little bit lower, but let's say under 300-400 emails, then you really should think about converting some of those likes and follows two emails, so maybe giving them something free or release free or something, or just asking them to share their emails before you release that music. So if you have a following that is bigger than, let's say, we're saying bigger than 300 to 500, then, and you've decided that you have the time and you have the finances needed to invest, then it's definitely, there's some steps which can be helpful for you. I actually have a really good resource on the 30 plus one webpage, which is about self-releasing an album, and it just gives a timeline. It actually narrows it down to a year. It includes the writing and recording time, but it's just a written resource that may be helpful in planning, in going, you know, in planning your own self-release as well. And it will go a bit more in depth than maybe I will on this podcast, but I'll definitely put a link to that resource on the show notes, which will be on the main website as well. So I would say once you decided to go ahead, that you want to start with planning and budgeting. And with planning, we've kind of, you know, if you've gone through those questions that I was talking about before, about kind of deciding whether or not this is for you, the self-release, then you definitely will have done this, some of this work already. So having some goals and some milestones. The second bit, or the next bit to do, I would say, is to also look, well, when doing your goals and milestones, you might want to look at similar artists, but that are on a bigger scale than you, so that have laddered up. I like to use this term because I like the visual of it. You know, you're on rung one, but you, if you're on rung one of the ladder, speak properly, if you're on rung one of the ladder, then you want to look at people that are on rung two and three and see what they are doing, what were the pivotal moments in their career, what kind of things can you mirror, what can you learn from them, what are the venues that are big and specific for your genre of music that you should be trying to play, and things like that. So that should be all incorporated into your plan. You want to also look at plugging some of the gaps. So if you have a team in place, so you're a manager and obviously there's the artist, and say you've got someone who in the band maybe who does design, then you've got someone who does design. But if you don't, then that's a gap that you might want to plug, that you want to look at getting a designer in to do some artwork for some of the release or that kind of thing. You may decide that, and to ladder up, you want to be a bit more intense on the promotion of this album, and you really want it out, and you've identified some major blogs or some major online music TV channels, and you know that within your team you do not have the contacts for those channels, then you may want to look at working with someone music PR. I just want to go back a bit to designers, and actually I'll talk about working with other people. So like I was saying, when you look at plugging some of those gaps, I will talk about that a little bit more later. But just as the designers have come up, a place that I would really recommend, again, a link I'll put in the show notes, is Creative Commission. I've used them a few times. You put a job up there and you have your budget and you detail what the job is, and it doesn't cost you anything to do that, and you get a response back. And I have to say that all the designers that I've encountered on that site are really high quality. You know, you get to look at their work. I'm not saying every single one is, but it's definitely been my experience, and it would definitely be something that I would recommend for others to use. And I will always, when I'm talking about services, be really clear about whether I've used them or not, and whether or not I can recommend them, and where it's definitely a service that you would like a formal review on or like to know more about, then I will, of course, endeavour to actually test that as well. So that can all be the kind of stuff that's left on the feedback for Facebook. So back to the planning and budgeting. After you've done that, I would say in terms of budget, you want to break down everything and then you want to see what the associated costs are. And this does have to be done at this stage because if you calculate it and your budget is more than you've got in savings, for example, then you want to look at other ways of getting funding. And this can all take some time. So it needs to happen right at the beginning. We can do a whole other episode on funding, but there are some really cool resources out there already. I believe that there is, it's either the Unsigned Guide or Help Musicians who do a great guide on funding. I will definitely, again, put the link to that funding in show notes as well. And another thing I would say while budgeting and planning to consider is to really cater to your existing fan base. So if you have 500 fans, so 500 followers, and you got 400 emails, and you know that in your town when you perform or in your city you can fill a venue with 100 to 150 capacity, then that is what you cater to. So when you're doing your launch event, you look at venues with 100 to 150 capacity. When you're sending out a newsletter, you know you're emailing it to that 400 people that you have the email addresses for. And when you really target and focus on that existing, you know, bird in the hand, so to speak, so that those existing fans that you have, you'll find growth in your fan base organically. So people will recommend to other people, people will share things, etc. So definitely let that guide the scale of activities. If you've got a really small following, or you've got a following but they're scattered and you couldn't necessarily fill a small venue, then you don't do a venue event as your launch party. You do maybe a live stream on Facebook and invite, you know, your 500 fans who are all over the world to log in and screen that and watch that and get that to be a way to get them to support your new release. So really let that lead the way. The other big thing that you have to do is you have to set a release date. Everything works back from the release date. And it doesn't really need to be set in stone, and it's just that you do need to do something at this planning stage. Obviously there's points where there's no return, where you start to publish the release date, or like more difficult to turn it, but really during your planning stage, as long as you've got a realistic approximate, then it gives you time to work back from. And of course, if things slip or whatever, you can always move it further back as well. You want to, when you're giving yourself a timeline, as I said, the tool that we have gives 12 months, but it'll be different for everyone depending on where you are in the writing stage, you know, how long it takes. If you need to get money together to do, you know, finish off the tracks, to mix them, to master them, and which is really get them ready to just be easily heard and listened to, then that may take extra time. So you'll know these things that may affect your timeline or take it outside of what, you know, where I've said you can do it in 12 months. It may take it outside of that for you, or it may mean that that you can do it in a lot less than that. Bear in mind that there are some things. So I would say once you set the date and you work back, you start working back with some things that you know are set. Like I mentioned music PR before, so working with an agency that has contacts in with print and with print media, with online media, with radio, etc. They can need 3 to 6 months, I would say more likely to be 6 months before a release date, to actually work on promotion. So you'd have to kind of be engaging them before, finding them, communicating with them, engaging them well before that, and allowing that 6 months in your planning timeline as well. I just want to go back a little bit as well about the production of music, is that you, the artist may want to get some kind of feedback. Now, it's great if manager is a musician, and they're a bit more of a creative manager than, you know, obviously, and even not as a musician. I mean, I'm not a musician and I don't come from a music background, but I can still give critical feedback on tracks or a performance because I'm a music consumer. So, you know, and I'm someone who goes to live gigs, etc. So you can still do that. But there's, and also as an extension of that, there's always friends and family and maybe even people, other industry contacts that you have, which I think are really good to seek feedback. But also you have professional sites for feedback. There are a few of them, but one that springs to mind instantly is SubmitHub. I will definitely do an article, and I'm just going to write the notes down now, on the best services to use for these recommendations. But actually, it'd be really good to hear from anyone who's used any of those formal feedback services and the recommendations that they would give. I say SubmitHub only because artists I've worked with have used it and they found it of some value. It also has a benefit of being connected with a lot of blogs. So you submit your music for that feedback, but at the same time, you can also submit it for review for blogs as well. So that's a bit of a time saver if that's successful for you. I think it's good to, and this is why it's good to even start thinking about this, promoting your music at the planning stage, is it's a good idea to get a theme and a feel of the music and kind of how you, what feel you want for the branding and promotion, because then that directs the activities that you do. It directs the kind of launch event, and also maybe things that you post on social media afterwards about it and leading up to promoting it and going to social media. One of the things you want to do as part of your promotional activities is you want to make sure that your online profiles are all good and they are synchronized and up to date, but also that you have a strategy around posts. So someone doesn't go to your Facebook and see the last time you post was a month ago. But in fact, there's a regular structure. And there are some things I would say that you can definitely pre-plan on, like if you know there's dates that are coming up that are relevant to your genre of music, or if you have a theme and feel, again, that are relevant to the theme and feel, then you can get those ready. And there are images that you can get ready to share that you would know would be great. And you can use things like, and there's quite a lot of them out there now, and they go and they work for right across social media platforms. But for example, if you're looking just at Twitter, you can use things like TweetDeck, where you can schedule your listings. So you could schedule a few to start with every week just to take the pressure off, so that you know that some are going out, even if it's just three times a week, of the ones that you've pre-planned. And you can do that. You can plan them all together in a block of time, which I, for me personally, works really, really well. One of the things you don't want to leave out of promotion is booking gigs. So you want to, again, like I think I mentioned before, is that you want to look at venues that are specific to your genre, that add some credibility to what you're doing because of the prestige of those venues. And if you can try and get to play at those venues, even if it's like a smaller section at that venue, then that will be really helpful for your promotion. Time scale for promotion is really important as well. If you're going to write to blogs yourself, if you're going to send a press release that you've created and send that out to blogs, you want to leave enough time for them to be able to actually get it into their cycle of their writing cycle. And as I said, if you're going to include, if you're going to use external professional services, then you have to make sure that you're leaving enough time that they've already stipulated. Other things that you might want to consider during the promotional stage are things like producing a video. Always a good way to promote, getting that visual. You may want to, again, this is another thing that you can schedule, using there's loads now, but using services like MailChimp, you can get your newsletters ready, you can pre-schedule those, they have great design templates, you can see who's opened them, there's so much, there's so many benefits to that, so getting that email promotion ready. And you could do a collaboration as well. So again, this is a focus about laddering up, which I think, well, it's not a focus. I would say something I would consider or advise my artist to consider when I am working, when you're thinking about people to collaborate with, is really laddering up. Your collaborations, ideally, should be someone who's actually on a rung ahead of you or is a bit higher up on your current rung. If you can get somebody who has a larger following than you to collaborate with, then you're doing something right, because then you are exposing yourself and presenting yourself to their much larger following, and by association it will tend to grow your own and raise your profile. So those are the things that you want to think about during the promotion stage. And then of course there's the launch event, which, like I said, should very much be catered to your existing fan base. Yes, the anticipation is that your fan base will grow, and undoubtedly it will as you start to do all these activities around it. But you cater to your existing fan base for sure, and that should lead whatever you do with your launch event, which I've already gone over. And post the event, it's really, really important not to take your foot off the pedal and to keep the momentum going. During the promo stage, I think I actually might have forgotten to mention this, but you need to, oh no, I did say it, booking the gigs with, at the venues, but you should also have, so gigs leading up to the release and gigs going immediately after the release as well. Like I said, foot not off the pedal, the momentum should continue. When you're starting to get feedback from your music and reviews and articles, you should definitely be able to say, oh, we're also playing this show at this day and it shouldn't be too far off in the future. So definitely more gigs. You have to continue with the social media, and you definitely have to engage. Yeah, I would say it can't just be your social media. You know, fans have to be sharing it, but also there needs to be influencers. So, online bloggers and relevant industry blogs and online magazines and those things definitely need to be on board. You need to be looking to get those on board as well. And of course, you can't forget by ending to thank everyone who's been involved. Now, you know, I've gone through a kind of steps which are simplified, that I haven't gone into everything in great detail, but it's definitely strong starting points and enough to kind of set out a plan where you can then look at each bit in more detail. I think the big question is, in this self-release, can it really make a dent? You know, is it really worth the trade-off in terms of growing a fan base? So let's put aside just saying, oh yes, I've released my music, and maybe, you know, and I know there's a lot of people that just do it just to add some credibility to what they're doing and let people know it's not just a hobby and that they're doing that, but actually, you know, can you really make loads of sales? Can you really elevate your profile to the next level by self-releasing? Well, you know, I would say in terms of reaching some of those goals, like I said, engaging the fan base, or even getting signed by label or getting in front of industry professionals, absolutely it can. If, as I said, you distinguish between just releasing and releasing successfully. And we can look at some big examples of people like Justin Bieber, who was spotted on YouTube. And we can, and I'm not saying these things happen all the time, but the fact is that they do happen. And there'll be loads of examples of artists on perhaps a smaller scale where also these things have happened. I know that Ed Sheeran released his early music, he self-released that, and that was obviously instrumental in building his profile and getting him in front of people. Stormzy's big album, Gang Signs and Prayer Signs. Gang Signs and Prayer. He self-released that album. Actually, that, you know, that whole kind of UK grime rap has been really pioneering in the whole self-release activity and self-promotion activity. If you look at some of the biggest stars, not just now, not just in that scene, but actually coming from the UK, like Skepta, and also his brother JME, they set up their own label, BBK, where they release all their music on, and have done even before Skepta was on the level of profile that he is on now. What I will say is, you know, most of us are somewhere in between zero followers and Ed Sheeran, Justin Bieber, Stormzy, Skepta and JME. Completely understands that. Most of our teams are somewhere in between. So it's important to recognise what all these people that self-released their album have in common. And what I would say is that these artists either had a profile before they released, and not as, you know, not, it's not this big profile that they have now, but they had a profile before they released. They had some level of following that they played to. I would say that they either had a high, some of them had high profile collaborators, which brought them up. So suddenly, so they were doing all their own music, but then they did a track with a collaborator who was a couple of rungs up, and that brought them up. Or they had a champion in the industry, people that got to hear their music and just loved it, and who were a bit influential. And again, that's a whole benefit of putting of releasing your music when you do have some kind of following. I think also the other big thing is filling those gaps, which I mentioned before. So when you identify some of these gaps, I think you have to be really honest and realistic about some of the missing skills in your team, in your management team, and amongst the artists that you're working with. So, I know that for Stormzy's album, he engaged distribution. So distribution is about how your music gets in front of fans. So you have online distribution, and then you have physical distribution as well. So getting it into shops, etc. And then the online distribution is, as I mentioned before, things like iTunes and Bandcamp and whatever. So if you work with a distribution company, then they do all the work with their existing contacts in terms of getting music in front of people. So you can engage distribution service. If you are looking at booking gigs and maybe raising your profile in Europe or more widely, then you can of course do the cold calling yourself, but it may be a good idea to think about engaging an agent, or an international, a local one, or an international one. And this is all very much in line with laddering up. So, you know, you could continue to do what you've been doing, or you can look at doing it on a bigger scale. And sometimes this involves getting people who specialize in that area involved. Having some media or press coverage is one of the determinants of whether you are ready to self-release. So whether you have some kind of profile is also, yes, it's about the number of follows and email addresses that you have, but it's also about the team you have in place. So have you got a really strong manager who's super connected? Then, yep, you're also in a good position. Have we got in the team, people that are super connected in other ways? Yes, you're in a strong position. But another thing is, have you had any media coverage? Have you had any good reviews? Have you had any high-profile gigs? That's another question. And if you can answer yes to that, then definitely you're ready to like ladder up and do the self-release there. And if you've done that, then maybe what you want to look at now is engaging some music PR. So some people who specialize in getting you reviews, in getting you on TV, in getting you on online music channels, in getting you, they can also do sync and licensing arrangements, which is about putting your music to products, TVs, adverts, which is again another source of income, which is a whole other episode all on its own. You also have, which is more or less repeats this, these kind of services, but you have options now for label services where you can buy things independently. You've got these label services from people like Absolute, Caroline, Ignition, BMG, and there's more, there's loads more, where you can engage them for individual services like distribution, like branding, like, you know, all the things that labels would normally do under one big umbrella. These things, of course, take investment. And that's the thing that you have to consider, like I said at the beginning. And I would say that what is the budget range is what I'm trying to offer. But I would definitely say that you want to, it will depend on the size of what you're trying to do. So it's a big range, but you want to have a set amount of money aside after you've done that budget, which will allow, after you've done the budget right at the beginning stage, which will allow you to go through the process. And these services, professional services, can cost from £1,000 to engage and upwards. So there are a lot of options. And I think it's quite nice to end on the potential that somebody listening could be, you know, the next independent release that suddenly gets huge. And I would love to hear about your experiences with releasing it yourself and doing it yourself. Also about any professional services that you engage and how you found that. I would absolutely love to hear it. So really welcome your feedback on this. So to keep to the original plan, I am going to sign off now. I hope that you found this valuable, and I really hope that you can join me on the next episode. I think I did forget to say that they will definitely be weekly. I feel scared even saying that and committing to doing it every week, but I absolutely will. So that's it from me. I'm going to sign off and really hope to see you next time. Thank you for listening to 30 Plus One for Music Managers at 30plus1.co.